In the vast landscape of modern fantasy literature, few series have achieved the cult status and enduring appeal of Stephen King's The Dark Tower. The fifth installment, Wolves of the Cala, marks a pivotal turning point in the saga, a book that celebrity fans like Norman Reedus and Guillermo del Toro have cited as their favorite in the series. Published in 2003 after King's near-fatal accident in 1999, this volume represents both King's triumphant return to his magnum opus and a masterful blend of fantasy, western, and horror elements. The novel's cultural impact extends beyond literature. Its themes of sacrifice, duty, and the blurring of fiction and reality have influenced countless works across various media. What makes this particular installment so compelling is how it stands as both a self-contained adventure and a crucial piece of King's larger multiverse, where the boundaries between worlds, including our own, begin to dissolve in fascinating and terrifying ways. Roland Deschain and his companions, Eddie Dean, Susanna Dean, Jake Chambers, and the Billy Bumbler Oi, have survived their encounter with Blaine the Mono and emerged into a version of America devastated by Superflu. Following the path of the beam toward the Dark Tower, they've become a true quartet, one from many, bound by destiny and shared purpose. What's remarkable about this group is how they've evolved from reluctant travelers into something approaching family. Roland, once the cold, calculating last gunslinger, has become a teacher and father figure. His ancient lineage from Gilead and the line of Eld gives him a natural authority, but it's his growing capacity for connection that truly defines his leadership. Eddie Dean has transformed most dramatically. The former heroin addict from New York has discovered natural talents that suggest he might have gunslinger blood himself. His instinctive skill with horses, his growing proficiency with weapons, and his quick thinking in crisis situations all point to a heritage that transcends worlds. When the town meeting requires a spokesperson, it's Eddie who steps forward, finding eloquence he never knew he possessed. Susanna Dean, formed from the integration of Odetta Holmes and Detta Walker, brings both compassion and fierce determination to the group. Despite her physical limitations, having lost her legs before joining Roland's quest, she becomes one of their most formidable fighters. Her mastery of the Oriza plates, deadly throwing weapons wielded by the women of Calibrin Sturgis, demonstrates her adaptability and warrior spirit. Jake Chambers, the boy who died twice, carries wisdom beyond his years. His bond with Oi, the intelligent Billy Bumbler who can speak simple words, provides both comic relief and unexpected tactical advantages. Jake's friendship with Benny Slightman reveals his longing for normalcy even as his gunslinger instincts sharpen. When he discovers Ben Slightman Sr.'s betrayal, Jake faces the painful adult realization that doing what's right often comes at a terrible personal cost. Together, they form a perfectly balanced unit. Roland's centuries of experience, Eddie's street smarts, Susanna's determination, and Jake's intuition combine to create something greater than the sum of its parts. This unity becomes their greatest strength as they face the challenges of Calibrin Sturgis, where they must stand against the mysterious wolves who steal children from the borderlands. Calibrin Sturgis exists in a world that's moved on, a phrase that carries profound significance in King's Dark Tower universe. It's a place where time has become elastic, where ancient technology mingles with feudal farming practices, and where the boundary between the physical and metaphysical grows increasingly thin. The Cala represents a fascinating cultural hybrid. Its language blends Spanish-influenced terms with archaic English, creating a dialect that feels both foreign and strangely familiar. The economy centers around rice cultivation, with the rhythmic Comala planting songs serving as both work chants and fertility rituals. The social structure combines elements of democracy, town meetings called by passing a feather, with the practical authority wielded by wealthy ranchers like Wayne Overholzer. Most striking is the high incidence of twins in the Cala. Nearly all children are born as identical pairs. This genetic anomaly becomes the central tragedy of the community, as the wolves who raid the town once every generation always take one child from each set of twins. These children return, ruined, mentally simple and physically altered. They grow to enormous size during agonizing growth spurts in adolescence, then age rapidly and die painfully in their 30s. The Kala's response to this generational trauma has been resignation, until Tian Jaffords, watching his twin sister Tia labor in the fields like an animal, decides enough is enough. His call for resistance divides the town between those willing to fight and those who fear the consequences of failed rebellion. This conflict reveals the community's complex moral landscape. The cowardice of merchants like Eben Took, the calculating neutrality of ranchers like Overholzer, and the quiet courage of farmers like the Jaffords family. Into this setting comes Father Callahan, a character whose presence creates one of the novel's most fascinating metafictional elements. Readers of King's earlier novel, Salem's Lot, will recognize him as the priest who failed to stand against the vampire Kurt Barlow. Now in exile in another world, Callahan has found a measure of redemption as the old fella, ministering to the people of Calabrin Sturgis while hiding a terrible secret beneath his church floorboards. The wolves represent the perfect embodiment of generational trauma, a recurring nightmare that visits the community like clockwork, stealing children and leaving broken families in their wake. Their approach is heralded by Andy, the seemingly helpful messenger robot who secretly serves as their spy, delivering the dreaded countdown. The wolves are coming in 30 days. King masterfully builds tension through the community's descriptions of these raiders. They arrive from Thunderclap, a dark land to the east, riding gray horses that move with unnatural speed. They wear wolf masks over green cloaks, carry strange weapons that emit deadly light, and deploy whirling sneeches that can strip a man to bone in seconds. Their ruthless efficiency in selecting and abducting children has left the Kala paralyzed with fear for generations. The mystery of the wolves' true nature becomes one of the novel's central questions. Are they supernatural creatures? Vampire servants? Robots? The answer, when finally revealed, carries King's signature blend of horror and dark irony. The wolves are indeed robots, but their appearance is based on a fictional character from Marvel Comics, Dr. Doom from the Fantastic Four series. Their weapons are similarly derived from fiction, including Harry Potter's Golden Snitch, reimagined as a deadly weapon. This revelation connects to one of the novel's most disturbing themes, the blurring of fiction and reality. The wolves emerge from Thunderclap, but their design comes from our world's popular culture. They represent a kind of cultural appropriation across dimensions, where elements of entertainment are repurposed as instruments of terror. This pattern appears throughout the Dark Tower series, suggesting that the boundaries between worlds, including the boundary between King's fictional universe and our reality, are breaking down in ways that threaten the fundamental structure of existence. The wolves' purpose remains ambiguous even after their defeat. They take children to extract something from their brains before returning them damaged beyond repair. This harvesting of cognitive material hints at darker forces working behind the scenes, forces connected to the Crimson King, the ultimate antagonist of the Dark Tower series, who seeks to topple the tower itself and plunge all realities into chaos. One of the novel's most intriguing concepts is Tadash, a state of traveling between worlds that occurs when reality's boundaries grow thin. Roland's Kitet experiences this phenomenon after eating certain mushrooms, finding themselves transported to New York City in 1977 while their physical bodies remain in Midworld. These Tadash journeys reveal crucial information about parallel threats to the Dark Tower. In New York, they discover Calvin Tower, a bookstore owner who possesses the vacant lot on 2nd Avenue where a single rose grows, a rose that represents the tower itself in their world. The rose is under threat from the Sombra Corporation, a front for the Crimson King's forces, who pressure Tower to sell the property. During these Tadash experiences, the characters notice disturbing inconsistencies between visits. Book authors change names, details shift, and the fabric of reality seems increasingly unstable. These anomalies center around the number 19, which appears with obsessive frequency throughout their journey, in names, dates, and seemingly random occurrences. The Tadash state also reveals the presence of vagrant dead, spirits trapped between worlds who appear as corpses visible only to those experiencing the Tadash phenomenon. These unsettling encounters suggest that the breakdown of reality affects not just space, but the boundary between life and death itself. Most significantly, Tadash reveals the connection between Black 13, the dangerous artifact hidden beneath Father Callahan's church, and the Rose in New York. Both represent aspects of the Dark Tower, the linchpin of all realities. Black 13's malevolent power contrasts with the Rose's beauty and harmony, suggesting opposing forces at work in the multiverse, destruction versus creation, darkness versus light. These Tadash journeys establish the novel's cosmic stakes. Roland's Quartet isn't just fighting to save one town from the wolves. They're engaged in a battle for the integrity of reality itself across multiple worlds and timelines. Their immediate mission in Caliburn Sturgis connects directly to their larger quest for the Dark Tower, creating a narrative where local and universal concerns become inextricably linked. In a masterful subversion of Western tropes, King introduces the Sisters of Orisa, women who wield deadly throwing plates as weapons. These plates, called Rizas, are based on the legend of Lady Orisa, who avenged her father's murder by decapitating the villain Grey Dick with a plate at a banquet. The sisters represent an alternative power structure within the patriarchal society of Calibrin Sturgis. While men dominate public discourse and formal authority, the women maintain their own traditions and capabilities. Margaret Eisenhart, Zalia Jaffords, Rosalita Munoz, and others practice their skills in secret, maintaining a lineage of female warriors parallel to the male-dominated ranching culture. Susanna's integration into this sisterhood creates one of the novel's most empowering storylines. Despite her physical differences, she masters the cross-hand throwing technique with remarkable speed, demonstrating a natural talent that earns the sisters' respect. Her ability to throw 8 plates in 3 seconds, creating a perfect vertical line of impacts on a target, transforms her from an outsider into a valued ally. The Rizas themselves represent a fascinating blend of domestic and martial elements. Ordinary household items repurposed as deadly weapons, they symbolize how the women of the Kala have transformed their traditional roles into sources of strength. The plate's effectiveness against the technologically advanced wolves suggests that ancient wisdom sometimes trumps modern weaponry, a recurring theme in King's work. During the final confrontation with the wolves, the sisters prove as deadly as the gunslingers. Margaret Eisenhart dies heroically in battle, while Rosalita and Zalia continue fighting with precision and courage. Their contribution proves essential to victory, demonstrating that the Kala's salvation requires both male and female strength working in concert. The Sisters of Orisa storyline enriches the novel's exploration of power dynamics. In a world where gunslingers represent a masculine tradition of violence, the sisters offer a feminine counterpart, no less deadly, but governed by different principles. Their plates kill from a distance like guns, but require different skills and carry different cultural associations. This duality reflects King's interest in how gender shapes our relationship to power, violence, and protection. While the wolves represent an external threat to the community, Susanna Dean faces a more intimate horror, an entity growing inside her own body. Since their encounter with a demon during Jake's rescue, Susanna has been pregnant with something not fully human. This pregnancy has created a fourth personality within her, Mia, daughter of Nun, whose sole purpose is protecting and nourishing the chap growing inside her. Mia's emergence represents a terrifying loss of autonomy. While Susanna sleeps, Mia takes control of their shared body, crawling into swamps to devour frogs, fish, and other raw creatures. In her mind, Mia transforms these revolting feasts into elaborate banquets in an ancient castle, a delusion that allows her to fulfill her biological imperative without confronting its horror. Most disturbing is how Mia can manifest physical changes in their shared body. During Todosh's journeys to New York, Susanna temporarily regains her legs, a miracle that brings her joy until she realizes these limbs belong to Mia, not her. This physical transformation symbolizes the pregnancy's invasion of her bodily autonomy, with another entity literally reshaping her form to serve its purposes. The pregnancy creates tension within Roland's quartet, particularly between Roland and Eddie. Roland has known about Susanna's condition since the beginning, but chose to let events unfold naturally, following his belief in Ka, destiny. Eddie, upon discovering this secret, feels betrayed by Roland's silence. This conflict reveals the different moral frameworks guiding each character. Roland's fatalistic acceptance versus Eddie's protective instinct to confront problems directly. As the novel progresses, Susanna's pregnancy accelerates, with Mia growing stronger and more independent. The contractions that begin during the battle with the wolves signal that birth is imminent, a birth that will separate Susanna from her quartet as Mia takes their shared body to New York to deliver the chap. This impending separation creates the novel's cliffhanger ending, with Roland and the others racing to Doorway Cave, only to find that Susanna slash Mia has escaped through the unfound door with Black 13. The pregnancy storyline embodies body horror in its purest form, the terror of something alien growing inside oneself, changing one's body and mind against one's will. It also connects to the novel's larger themes of invasion and violation, mirroring how the wolves invade the community to steal children, how Andy invades the town's trust as a spy, and how the forces of the Crimson King invade the integrity of reality itself. Among the novel's most morally complex storylines is Ben Sleitman's son's betrayal of the Kalala. As Jake discovers through his nighttime reconnaissance, Sleitman has been passing information to the wolves through Andy, revealing the town's defense plans and undermining their resistance. What elevates this beyond a simple tale of treachery is Sleitman's motivation. His son Benny is the only singleton, non-twin child in the Kalala because his twin sister died in infancy. This makes Benny uniquely vulnerable, as the wolves' pattern of taking only one twin from each pair wouldn't apply to him. Sleitman betrays his community to protect his son, making a devil's bargain that sacrifices many children to save his own. This moral compromise is reflected in the physical symbol of Sleitman's spectacles, rare technology in the Kalala that he received as payment for his betrayal. When his treachery is finally exposed after the battle, Sleitman crushes these glasses, symbolically rejecting the clearer vision they provided in favor of honest blindness. Roland's response to Sleitman's betrayal reveals his own moral evolution. The old Roland would have executed Sleitman without hesitation, seeing only the betrayal and not the desperate father behind it. Instead, Roland chooses mercy, not from compassion for Sleitman, but from understanding of fatherly love. Having come to see Jake as a son, Roland recognizes the terrible choices a father might make to protect his child. Tragically, Sleitman's betrayal ultimately fails to protect Benny, who dies during the battle with the wolves. This outcome suggests that moral compromises rarely achieve their intended purpose, that betraying one's principles often loses what one sought to protect. Sleitman's grief over his son's body, coupled with the knowledge that his own actions contributed to this outcome, represents one of the novel's most heartbreaking moments. The Sleitman storyline explores how love can lead to betrayal, how protection can become destruction, and how moral clarity becomes impossible when forced to choose between competing loyalties. In a novel filled with supernatural horrors, this very human tragedy resonates with particular power. The novel's most philosophically challenging element emerges near its conclusion when Roland's quartet discovers a book in Calvin Towers' collection titled Salem's Lot by Stephen King. To Father Callahan's horror, this book contains his own story, his battle with vampires in Jerusalem's Lot, Maine, and his subsequent fall from faith. The book includes details only Callahan could know, suggesting that his entire existence has been chronicled by an author from another world. This revelation creates a dizzying metafictional loop. Callahan, a character from King's 1975 novel Salem's Lot, has crossed into the Dark Tower series, only to discover that his original story exists as fiction within this new reality. This suggests that the boundaries between fiction and reality are breaking down, that stories can become real and real beings can discover they're fictional. The implications extend beyond Callahan. If he comes from a world created by Stephen King, what does that suggest about Roland and his companions, about the Dark Tower itself? The novel hints that King himself may be more than just an author, that he might be a conduit through which the tower's story flows into our world, or perhaps even a creator whose writing literally brings these worlds into existence. This metafictional element connects to the novel's recurring theme of 19, which appears throughout as a kind of cosmic signature. The number shows up in character names, in countdowns, in seemingly random occurrences. Its persistence suggests a pattern underlying reality, perhaps the pattern of an author's design imposing structure on chaos. The wolves themselves embody this blurring of fiction and reality. Their appearance, based on Dr. Doom, their weapons derived from Harry Potter, these elements from fictional works have been repurposed as real threats in Roland's world. This suggests a troubling porosity between imagination and reality, where fictional creations can manifest as actual dangers. By introducing these metafictional elements, King transforms Wolves of the Calla from a straightforward fantasy adventure into something more philosophically challenging. The novel asks readers to consider the nature of fiction itself, how stories shape reality, how characters might exist independently of their creators, and how the boundaries between worlds, including the boundary between our world and the worlds we imagine, might be more permeable than we assume. Throughout Wolves of the Calla, characters struggle with the tension between predetermined fate, Ka, and free will. Roland embodies this conflict most directly. His belief in Ka as an unstoppable force often leads him to accept events rather than fight them, as with Susanna's pregnancy, which he knows about but chooses not to confront directly. Ka was a wheel, Roland often thinks, suggesting a cyclical inevitability to events. Yet the novel repeatedly shows characters making crucial choices that alter their destinies. Tien Jaffords chooses to call for resistance rather than accept the wolf's raid. Eddie chooses to pursue Susanna / Mia rather than let Ka take its course. Jake chooses to help the injured Tavery twins despite the danger to himself. These moments of choice within the framework of destiny create the novel's moral backbone. Characters may be bound by Ka, but how they respond to its challenges defines them. Roland demonstrates this when he tells his quartet, "First the smiles, then the lies, last comes gunfire." He accepts the inevitable confrontation with the wolves, but crafts a strategy that maximizes their chances of success. The Kamala dance that Roland performs at the town gathering symbolizes this dance between destiny and choice. The dance follows ancient, predetermined steps, yet Roland executes them with individual flair and passion. Similarly, the characters follow the path laid out by Ka while maintaining their agency within its boundaries. The novel's conclusion, with Susanna / Mia escaping through the unfound door to give birth in New York, represents both destiny fulfilled and a new choice point. The pregnancy that Ka set in motion now forces Roland, Eddie, and Jake to decide how they'll respond. Their immediate decision to pursue Susanna rather than continue their quest for the tower demonstrates their growth as a quartet. They choose loyalty to their companion over their larger mission. This balance between acceptance and resistance, between flowing with Ka and fighting against it, creates the novel's philosophical tension. In a universe governed by destiny, the characters discover that meaning comes not from changing what must happen, but from choosing how to face it, with courage, integrity, and loyalty to those who matter most. The Wolves of the Kala focuses primarily on the battle to save the town's children. The Dark Tower remains the ultimate destination guiding Roland and his companions. Their quest has been temporarily diverted, but not abandoned, a pattern that defines the entire series, where side adventures consistently connect back to the central journey. The rose in the vacant lot on 2nd Avenue represents the tower's presence in our world. When the Ka-Tet visits it during their Todash journey, they experience overwhelming sensations of rightness and harmony, coupled with visions of how the rose has subtly influenced history to prevent catastrophe. This suggests the tower isn't merely a physical structure, but a cosmic force maintaining the balance of all realities. Yet the rose shows signs of illness, a purple dissonance flickering within its glow. This deterioration mirrors the wider breakdown of reality evident throughout the novel. The thinning barriers between worlds, the increasing frequency of Todash experiences, the persistent appearance of the number 19 as a kind of glitch in reality's programming. The connection between the Kala's plight and the tower quest becomes explicit when Roland explains why they must help the townspeople. Unless we stand true, we'll never get within 1,000 miles of the tower. This statement reveals Roland's evolution from his earlier single-minded pursuit. He now understands that the path to the tower requires moral integrity, that abandoning those in need would corrupt their quest more fundamentally than any delay. By the novel's end, with Susanna/Mia gone through the unfound door, the tower quest faces its greatest challenge yet. The Ka-Tet has been broken, the breaking of the Tet that Roland feared above all else. Yet even as they prepare to pursue Susanna to New York, the tower remains their ultimate destination, the axis around which all their adventures revolve. This balance between immediate concerns and ultimate purpose gives Wolves of the Kala its narrative tension. The characters must constantly weigh their responsibility to the present moment against their cosmic mission, finding, as Roland eventually does, that these imperatives are not in conflict but fundamentally connected. The way to the tower lies through service to others, through standing true in the face of evil, whether it takes the form of wolves raiding a borderland town or the Crimson King threatening all of existence. Throughout Wolves of the Kala, the number 19 appears with unsettling frequency, in names, dates, counts of objects, and seemingly random occurrences. This numerical motif creates an underlying rhythm to the narrative, suggesting a pattern beneath the surface of reality that the characters can sense but not fully comprehend. When Eddie and Jake count the letters in Claudia Inez Bachman, they find exactly 19. The same is true for Richard Patrick Sayre and Donald Frank Callahan. The copyright date in Jake's Charlie the Choo-Choo book adds up to 19. Even Andy the Robot cites Directive 19 when refusing to answer questions about the wolves. This numerical pattern connects to the novel's exploration of reality's breakdown. The characters experience the number as a kind of glitch, a repeating signal indicating that something fundamental is wrong with the structure of their universe. Eddie describes the feeling as everything having gone 19, a phrase that captures both the numerical pattern and the sense of wrongness it conveys. The significance of 19 extends beyond mere coincidence. It seems to mark points where different worlds intersect, where the barriers between realities grow thin. The vacant lot with the rose is located at 2nd Avenue and 46th Street in New York. 4 plus 6 is 10, 1 plus 0 equals 1, making 19 when combined with 2nd Avenue. The doorway cave contains 19 steps leading to the unfound door. These locations where 19 appears are precisely where reality's boundaries prove most permeable. King never fully explains the significance of 19 within Wolves of the Kala, leaving it as a mystery that extends into subsequent novels. This deliberate ambiguity enhances the cosmic horror element of the story, the sense that patterns exist beyond human comprehension, that reality operates according to rules we can glimpse but never fully understand. The 19 motif also connects to the metafictional elements. If Roland's world is partly a creation of Stephen King, as suggested by the discovery of Salem's Lot in Tower's collection, then perhaps 19 represents a kind of author signature, a numerical watermark indicating the constructed nature of the reality the characters inhabit. Whatever its ultimate meaning, the persistence of 19 throughout the narrative creates a sense of uncanny connection, a suggestion that seemingly random events are part of a larger design. Whether that design represents order or its breakdown remains the novel's central mystery.